out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 16th of February, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Friday, we are very glad to be welcoming back on the show for his second appearance this week, Florin Geyer from Mysterium Fasces. Florin, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling doubly honored, Sven. Hopefully I'm a little bit higher energy in this episode, but it's always good to be back on.
Yeah, you definitely seem to be. Anyway, just from talking to you just before we went on air, I knew you were feeling a bit under the weather at the last episode we did. So I'm just very glad you were able to make it. Do you think we're going to get another Mysterium Fasces soon? Have you got one planned out?
Hopefully later on today I should be doing a recording with some gentlemen from Bulgaria. So hopefully that should be able to come out regular time next Monday. And I've also got a show scheduled with several gentlemen from the United States. Hopefully we'll be able to record in philosophy next week. So we should have at least two if everything goes according to plan.
Excellent, excellent. I can think of a certain Bulgarian in the chat room who will be pleased to hear that. Concentrating on Bulgaria. We get quite a lot of requests for content that centers on Bulgaria, funnily enough. And we get a lot of listeners from Bulgaria. They were second only to America the other week. So I'm surprised we don't actually have more contacting us.
That's fascinating. I've never met a bad Bulgarian.
Yeah, they're the real Greeks, don't you know?
Anyway. Yes, I'm sure they'll be very upset if we start talking about Basil II and all that. Anyway, we have our topics for today.
We do. And the first one's particularly shocking. Really, really quite shocking. And the pictures that are accompanying it are they're not the sort of thing you want to see before breakfast, I can tell you that. Young boy dancing group perform with lasers sticking out their butts. And it's rather a long article. It comes from Vice magazine. And what I've done, I've cut a couple of quotes out from it so that we can just give listeners a brief description of what it entails. And this is the journalist, and this is what he writes about going to see this dancing group perform. Upon entering the venue's main room, it felt like some sort of Wiccan ritual was going on. Candles marked out a large circle in the center of the dance floor. A male performer with a jockstrap in the center of his face. A blonde woman with weave tracks repurposed as a belt. And other performers in bondage-y short shorts grazed through the space slowly. They waved metal amulets, reminiscent of clergymen's incense burners in the air, to a chant-heavy tune from the Ghost in the Shell soundtrack, before crawling all over each other in what looked like a refined game of Twister. Then, they scurried off to various corners of the room, and each inserted a green laser into their anuses. The performance quickly became total mayhem, with group members flailing wildly, creating a mosh pit, and running amok to a pitched-down, jittery dance remix of Enya's Only Time. The leader of the dance group, when asked what he was trying to convey, said this: "There are certain topics that are absolutely present. One is for sure, queer. Other ones are dance, movement, body, and of course sexuality. I don't know if you saw it in London, but one of our members, Nico, inserted a dildo." They then go into more details about the actual performance, talking about bleeding after inserting the lasers, some of the group not being able to perform the procedure as they have too many hemorrhoids, the audience joining in, and also inserting lasers, and they're basically just crawling around half naked with lasers sticking out of their backsides. And this is apparently performance art in 2018. And there are two points of this that I'd like to concentrate on. One is the fact that it resembles a Wiccan ritual, and with the circle and the candles, and they've probably got symbols there as well, pentagrams, the occult side of it. And the other part of this is the normalization of the obscene. And this is protected by anti-homophobia legislation. What this really is perverted sex for perverts to watch being performed in a club. But instead of that, it's being promoted as a dance troupe. It's a homosexual dance troupe. And this is what they do. They stick lasers up each other's backsides and crawl around on the floor. What are your thoughts about this, Floria? And I'm very sorry to have to introduce you to this at such an early time in the morning.
Well, you know, that seems to be life these days. It's really kind of a laugh or cry type scenario. Immediately when I read through this story, what strikes me is that this is not by any means or standard, historically speaking, a new sort of activity. If we look back at the ancient world, there was all sorts of kind of degenerate pagan cults which had these kind of hedonistic, you know, very famously the Dionysian rites, Bacchanalian rites, which as both the as the Hellenic civilization disintegrated in the early part of the first millennia, we saw a rise and an increase in the popularity of these Dionysian and Bacchanalian rites, especially among the kind of urban bourgeoisie, I guess we could say. Now, most people might there's a lot of propaganda about what the context of the religious atmosphere was in pagan Rome, and people kind of say, oh, the Romans, so religiously tolerant, you know, unlike those wicked, horrible Christians. That's actually not very true. The pagan Romans were tolerant of any religion that they found they could understand or had an old enough pedigree that they couldn't – they respected it simply because of its antiquity. So, you know, for instance, they didn't quite like the animal head gods of Egypt, but they knew they were quite old, or the same thing with the god of the Hebrews. You know, they thought the one god was quite funny, but they respected it because of its antiquity. And so there's actually instant they had these cults to Bacchus, to Dionysius, where, you know, you had these male and female pagan priestesses where they would, you know, gorge themselves on wine and quite likely hallucinogenic mushrooms and hashish and basically anything else they could get their hands on and engage in these, you know, orgies and every sort of sexual depravity. You know, this was actually illegal. This type of cult was not a licit religion. And there was very famously in Sicily back in the day a massacre of 300 of practitioners of the Dionysian cult by the Roman authorities because they considered it to be so gross and degenerate. It was antisocial. It was against the Roman sensibility. But of course, what we saw is in Rome particularly, as the culture began to degenerate and the morals began to loosen, these once illicit religions that were protected by law against their obscene fornication and their public practicing began to become more and more tolerated, especially among the middle and upper classes as they grew decadent and bored. And so this is where I went to immediately with this kind of stuff, is that this is all just a kind of modern, vile, Milotic rites, that kind of thing. And so the history really does repeat itself. And I would say that that's because, most of our listeners, I'm certainly agree, but, you know, this kind of corruption, this kind of evil, it's a spiritual phenomenon. And so, you know, we see these same archetypes play themselves out over thousands and thousands of years. These problems don't really go away. And that's why our ancestors had such lasting solutions to deal with this rot and this corruption. And so, yeah, that's where I go to immediately, is that it's, you know, kind of not very surprising. I mean, this same sort of thing probably has been going on in London for 100 years. The only difference is, as you bring it up, you know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, this would have been very much behind closed doors. And, you know, you couldn't have mainstream Vice articles promoting it to the whole world as a badge of pride and honor.
It's just been updated, isn't it? You know, by using lasers, by using modern technology, and inserting things into each other's anuses has gone on with the decadent class for centuries and millennia. And when you bring up what was going on in Rome and how decadent Rome had become, I can recall reading that when the Vandals and the Saxons, when they went into Rome, they were absolutely disgusted at the decadence that they saw. And the first things that they did was institute laws to make sure that women were married and that there was no prostitution. And we know how they felt about homosexuals. They would execute them by drowning them in the bog. And that was, you know, that was the result of behaving in this way. There's absolute decadence. And now, as we see, as we come to the end of our Western civilization, or what looks like the end of civilization, that the same activities are occurring. And these will be upper class activities. It will be the rich elites that are going along to this. I mean, this dance troupe is touring through Europe in some pretty prestigious places under the guise of being high culture, when all it really is this ritual occult sex magic. It all goes back to hedonism and being as degenerate as you possibly can, and these orgies. And that's why it reminds him of the occult, why it reminds the journalist of Wiccan ritual, because that's what's at the heart of the occult and the black magic, is sex magic, orgies. And this is why they would end up killing their babies as well. I mean, you can go back to Carthage, and they found all these bodies of murdered infants, and they were murdered as part of ritual. It was ritual murder of them. And we can go back to the Old Testament. And again, we hear about ritual murder of infants by the Canaanites and by these Canaanite tribes. And the reason why they would have these excess infants that required murdering is because they would get involved in all these orgies. I mean, the word Herodulae, where we get the word whore from, were these temple prostitutes that had to sleep with whoever went into the temple. It's all based on this sex magic. I think when we hear people that talk about there being white magic and black magic, white magic is just the frilly outside of it. That's all it is. It's just to entice people to come into the black magic, which is what the real thing is. I mean, magic is evil. Whatever it is, it is against God, and it will be used against God. And this is the end result of it. This is why I cannot really understand these pagans that claim to be pagan, because this is what's at the heart of it, is degeneracy and sex magic. And animal sacrifice and human sacrifice as well. That's at the far end of it. And Christianity is the antidote to that. And we see that with what happened in Rome. Do you want to add any more to that before I move on to our next subject, Florian?
No, not really. I would make one comment though on the, you know, as we saw both in ancient Rome and in our own civilization, there were laws that protected the population from what was considered to be, you know, grossly obscene and illicit religious practices and things that were against the interest of the public good. And we've seen that both of those in time kind of fell away or were repealed or engaged in a laxity. I would just, you know, remind people that this is just about these people are like the vanguard, right? And so by, you know, having this, the furthest, most disgusting, ridiculous, you know, literally lasers in people's butts, you know, it's like a joke or something, on published in Vice magazine, it makes everything that's less degenerate than that look better by comparison, right? And so, you know, people are saying, oh, well, you get these trannies and homos, lasers in their butts. Well, you know, these lesser degeneracies, they're sort of less shocking and much more acceptable by comparison. And this is indeed how it's normalized through, you know, through obscenity, through shock value, through the most edgy, you know, the most the furthest extent of like an idea, because this creates room for these other ideas. And of course we've seen this, you know, in far right politics and that kind of thing, and so it's a principle of propaganda rather than a moral evaluation in and of itself. But obviously when that principle of propaganda is applied to the most base and coarse degeneracy, we can see what the outcome of that will be.
Well, this is what the outcome from it is, and the toleration of it, and refusing to condemn homosexuals. We end up with cases like this happening. Top UNICEF children's rights campaigner who led UK's anti-smacking campaign is jailed for rape of boy 12 years old in latest charity sex scandal. a leading children's rights campaigner who helped governments around the world tackle the issue of abuse, has been jailed for raping a 12-year-old boy. Former UNICEF consultant Peter Newell admitted 3 counts of indecent assault and 2 counts of buggery and was sentenced to 6 years, 8 months in prison. That's all he got, 6 years for raping a 12-year-old boy. He has been placed on the sex offenders register indefinitely. The horrific sexual assaults took place over a 3-year period in the 1960s, but have only come to light following a police investigation last year. Well, what's he been doing for the last 50 years then, if this is the only crime that they've managed to pin on him? Newell, 77, of Wood Green, North London, who has led the campaign to ban the smacking of children in Britain, was sentenced at Blackfriars Crown Court on January the 3rd. News of his imprisonment comes amidst warnings that predatory pedophiles are exploiting the aid sector, after 125 British charity workers were accused of sexual abuse in 2017. The scale of the problem has been laid bare by the scandal facing Oxfam, whose staff have been accused of downloading pornography, using prostitutes in Haiti, and preying on teenage volunteers in UK shops. Along with his partner Rachel Hodgkin, Newell helped prepare UNICEF's Implementation Handbook for the Convention on the Rights of the Child, launched in Geneva in January 1998. The document, which provides a detailed reference of law, policy and practice aimed at promoting and protecting the rights of children, is still used by governments all over the globe. It is also used by various United Nations agencies, NGOs, human rights institutions, and academics. So this pedophile, this horrific monster that sodomized a 12-year-old boy, and who knows how many other children he has raped, is the man behind designing UNICEF's handbook for the Convention of the Rights of the Child. Now, I would suggest that children don't have any rights. They're innocent. How can they have rights? They belong to their parents. It's the parents that decide what rights a child has, not someone from outside the family. And this is why this monster, this pervert, came up with the idea of this children's rights, because he wants to give children rights over their own body so that the child can be blamed for when he rapes them. They can say, well, the child gave consent. Children have rights that they can consent to having sex. And then it's not rape and buggery when he does this to a 12-year-old child. The whole idea of children's rights really sickens me, because the people that don't know any better think, oh, well, that's good. Children should have rights. Yes, children should have rights. But it's not rights to right to a family, right to a warm home, right to clothing. What it is right to give consent for having sex. That's what is at the root of it. It's pedophiles wanting to rape children. And now this bastard has been caught. And it's linked to these other pedophiles that are exploiting charities so that they can rape children. It's just sickening.
Yeah. It almost sounds hyperbolic, but like we say a lot, I mean, this is just unfortunately the level of depravity that exists in our world today. I mean, there's been many, many, many scandals of, you know, involving UNICEF and United Nations, you know, charitable organizations getting caught in third world countries, especially places like, you know, Africa and in Haiti, where they have active child smuggling and child trafficking operations, you know, just buying and selling children, you know, just straight up. You could go Google that. There's many, many articles that come up, and huge allegations, right? And so there's many people who say that this, all of this is part of one kind of, you know, integrated, tolerated, you know, pedophile network that goes on at the elite levels in with our rulers, whether in the United Kingdom or European Union or in the United States. And so we've certainly seen ample evidence through things like Pizzagate and so on to suggest this, at least to raise the question. And with such a long history of people in these positions being busted for such crimes, it wouldn't strike me at all. And indeed, I think it's quite the most likely scenario. So you're right on the child's rights thing. I think this is a kind of an important point to address, because people, it's kind of a word game. People have been really tricked by this whole rights nonsense. Now, traditionally, what Christianity teaches is that children and, say, animals have dignity, right? You know, women have dignity, right? They don't have rights. And what dignity means is that there is an inherent spiritual worth and value to them. That means that you cannot do certain behaviors. You cannot inflict upon them certain undignified actions, right? Because it violates their core nature. So, you know, you cannot, you have to treat, you know, animals, you know, and children with respect because they're sacred. They, in the case of children, they're made in the image and likeness of God, right? Your own family member. Same with animals. There's an understanding that the natural order itself is sacred, and so that we must treat it like that. But you know, the concept of, you know, of a right is nonsense. It's absurd because rights have always been linked to the holding of violence, the holding of the franchise, which has always been linked to the exercise of violence, and labor, of which children can do none of these things, right? And women, the vast majority of the time, can do none of these things. Which is why there hasn't been, in all of European history, any concept of, you know, rights for children or women or this kind of thing. It was just understood that, well, they have a basic Christian dignity, and that as Christians, we have to treat them with that level of respect that our Lord would want us to do, and that we see him, treat children with respect in the Gospels. And so I think that this is the, you know, like, again, liberalism, it's just the, you know, once you've murdered God, healthy traditions become perverted and ossified, and they're used, I think, as you say quite rightly, Sven, ultimately for evil. And so it doesn't, I agree with you, I think that the terminal of the imposing rights for children is it to break up the family unit, to give the state and, super state international authorities power over people's children, over people's families, over how they organize, how they raise them, their progeny, and eventually, indeed, to normalize the homosexuality and pedophilia is certainly one of those end goals. And it's at this point it's so undeniable, the normalization of pedophilia, that it's just there's not any hard argument that can be made against this, right? I mean, people. I remember back, 2006, 2007, where you would see people talk about the slippery slope fallacy a lot. You're like, these people say, if you legalize homosexual marriage, then it's going to be pedophilia. There's like, this slippery slope, stupid, racists and so on, homophobes. Well, I mean, it's 10 years later, and we can look back and we can see, actually, the slope is very slippery, and we've been sliding all the way down.
So they're normalizing it all the time, aren't they? They're trying to say that it's... it's some kind of sexual preference. It's not a sexual preference. It's evil for the sake of being evil. It's stealing a child's innocence. It's not so much about sex. Sex is used because that's the most effective way to do the most evil things. But they're demons that wish to steal away the innocence from a child. That's what a pedophile is. It's not a sexual preference. With this children's rights, I mean, when you have rights, you have duties. Children don't have any duties. I mean, they may feel a duty to their parents, but for a child to feel really safe, he feels he belongs to his parents. By saying that the government can hand rights to the child, it's saying, oh no, children belong to the governments. They don't belong to their parents. They belong to the governments. The government can hand out these rights to them. And as we know, if you accept that the government can hand rights out to you, then the government can withhold those rights. So the rights can be withheld from the child, and then he can be stripped of these rights because it's the government that gave them to him. It's disgusting what's going on there. Anyway, we can move on to this last article that I've got here, which is slightly more positive than the first two. And this is a military analyst who has criticized European Union leaders for failing to accept that the Western world is at war. And he has warned that Europe will see the worst terror attacks committed by Islamic extremists in 2018. And the good thing about this is that it's at last a military analyst is saying what we have been saying for years, even if the EU leaders are failing to take note of it. And he says, most politicians do not want to admit that the Western world is at war and should act accordingly. Policy responses are, in most cases, inadequate. Lukas Wissinger told Czech news channel CT24. Informants warn that there are hundreds and thousands of well-trained jihadists in Europe who are ready to carry out attacks, he said. noting that these Islamic State militants are returning from war zones in the Middle East after facing military defeat. The security specialist also observed that terror attacks, hitherto, have mostly been carried out by keen amateurs. They were not people who had special training from professional terrorists like the Islamic State, or professional training from American military advisors that were over there in Syria training these people before they eventually decided, oh no, we're going to be against them now. Continuing with what he says, when this new generation of returning trained Islamic State militants begins attacking, I think we are in for much worse things. I am convinced that there will be large-scale Islamic extremist attacks in Europe, Vizgunir warned. The defense analyst then hit back at the news presenter's criticism that to profile Europe's growing Muslim population is unfair and nonsense. I do not think it's nonsense, Vizgunir said. The fact is that the Muslim community, although many of its members do not have a radical inclination, is a community from which the threat is coming. Security services have identified 350 Islamic State militants who have returned to Britain from Syria last year and who pose a potential terror threat. And this is in addition to the 3,000 violent Islamic extremists that MI5 has confirmed are already in the UK. And that comes from Whitehall sources that were being interviewed by The Times. And when we look at this, they're actually welcoming these people back into Britain and all over Europe, when the people who didn't even fight for Germany, but just helped in their propaganda efforts, they were hanged for doing so. But these traitors, because we're told that these Muslims are supposed to be supporting Britain, they're supposed to be British citizens, they've gone abroad to fight for Muslims, for the Islamic State, who we are supposed to be at war with, and they're being welcomed back into Europe. They're being given housing, they're being given benefits, they're even being given free driving lessons in some countries. And there's also been a similar assessment has been made this month by defence analysts Jane's Terrorism and Insurgency Centre in a report that said the terror threat will increase in 2018 as foreign jihadists return to Europe with advanced knowledge learned while fighting with Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. Foreign fighters returning to Europe will provide critical skills that will help an increasing number of operational Islamic networks conduct more complex attacks, writes the report's author, Otso Iho. These skills include the construction of viable IEDs, learned in Iraq and Syria, where the Islamic State has produced IEDs on an industrial scale. Expertise in assault weapons and the use of new weapons types or technologies such as drones. In October 2017, the Sufan Center's report titled Beyond the Caliphate, Foreign Fighters and the Threat of Returnees found that at least 5,600 individuals from 33 countries who traveled to support the Islamic State have now returned to their countries of origin, many of which are in the West. So we are going to be seeing more terrorist attacks this year, and we're going to see them get more technical and complicated and more up-to-date and using technologies such as drones and improvised explosion devices. And obviously the military are now warning against this, but still our politicians are saying, oh, not all Muslims, it's not all Muslims, when they are the only people that are actually presenting this threat to us. Florian, have you had any problems with any of this in Canada? Have you heard about any Canadian citizens going to fight for ISIS and coming back over there?
Yeah, there have been more than a few. And in fact, I mean, I know neighbors personally who live next to Muslims who were members of terrorist groups and organizations, you know, and had the RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, their anti-terror division, you know, burst down their neighbor's door at, 1 o'clock in the morning to their great surprise, to pull out, guys who they then later convicted for support of terrorist organizations. So we haven't had many large scale terrorist attacks in this country yet, although naturally that's coming as merely as a result of the demographic shift that we're experiencing. And indeed, the fact that there are many, many Muslims who have gone to fight in Syria and are returning to this country and are not being not having any barriers put up against their return. And indeed, as you say, many of them are being given direct aid and comfort. And that's what the policy that the policy that the regime proposes in order to combat their radicalization is that in order to stop them from blowing up our cities, we just need to be really nice to them. Because if we're mean to them and if we kick them out of our countries, then that somehow will, they'll make them very upset and then they will do things that we won't like. But if we let them in and we're very nice to them, then maybe, just maybe, that will convince them that they should go soft on us. And so, I mean, it's the whole thing is so asinine because it's like, I had this experience the other day when, when you begin to talk to somebody who gets all of their news from the mainstream media and you want to discuss any piece of, you know, topical conversation with them, whether it's the Russia scandal or Muslims or whatever, and you begin to talk to these people and you realize that their whole, that the brainwashing is real and that their whole worldview, you know, is just filled with just nonsense and gross propaganda, just the vilest and most idiotic of ideas. And but that's the thing, is that this is really the level that the mass propaganda has devolved to, is that, I mean, these people are literally coming back from fighting us and our allies in the Middle East, and people are just expected to say, oh, no, there's no problem with that. Yeah, no, it's good. It's a good thing that the government is giving them aid and comfort. That's the level of stupidity that the mainstream narrative has devolved to. And the only backing for this is just raw emotion. It's just attitude. You know, it's when, for instance, this article mentions, you know, this military analyst, you know, goes on a television show and, you know, the news presenter says, oh, that's just nonsense critique, right? Well, that's the greatest counter argument he's got. He's just to dismiss it. And so I would say that all of this is, I think, you know, there's most people listening to this probably know about the Kalergi plan and these long-term goals to disrupt the ethnic coherence of the European continent and to destroy the native people of this civilization. And this is exactly what's being done. These regimes have enabled quite directly, maliciously, a clash of civilizations. They are importing a ready and able body of foreign militants and fighters, giving these foreign fighters aid and comfort and establishing them and helping build up their own infrastructure networks in our own country, so that, you know, in the long term, they're more effectively able to wage war against us and our descendants. That is the reality of the situation.
Well, you got a military advisor there that is saying this, and the interviewer, who knows nothing about the military, he's trained in doing is being a celebrity interviewer on the television, and he has the cheek to say, "Oh, that's nonsense," when this is somebody who knows what he's talking about. And similarly again with the threat assessment by this Sufan Center, they know what they are talking about, and they say this is a serious threat, and yet people just ignore it. Now, I think one of the things we should bring up to people when we talk about this is to say what happened to the people that came back from helping Germany after the war. They were hanged. Lord Horhor, John Amery, and others. They were hanged. And they didn't even take part in any fighting against Britain or the Allies. All they did was help with propaganda. And yet they were still hanged for their crimes. And now when we have brown people that go abroad, join the Islamic State, fight directly against Britain and America and against Russia, we welcome them back. We pat them on the back. We say, have a free house, have free driving lessons, have free benefits. Bring over all your relatives as well. Anything else that we can do to help you? And at the same time as doing this, people that are criticizing this, people that are standing up against it, they're being locked up for hate speech. I mean, all these are talking points that we can bring up to people when this comes up in conversation, because it does come up in conversation. Islam comes up in conversation with people all the time. And these are some of the points we should bring up when it does. Florian, thank you for coming on today. We'll look forward to hearing Mysterium Fasces next week. I'll be back after the weekend. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. God bless and hail victory.